it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into a Tuesday, Gary, how are you?
Like everybody, you're just like, okay, what kind of a world are we in right now?
Yeah, right.
Just driving in, very little traffic. We'll get to that coming up. Meanwhile, in Washington...
We can't have the cure be worse than the problem. But what we have done... So this is not retracing. This isn't anything. We've done it really well. Because this two-week period has been good. And I'm not saying it ends at that time. You know, we have another 7 days or so. I'm not saying it ends at that time. But I am saying, sir, it's been like this incredible learning process. That's going to go into the future.
He's very important to me, and I will be listening to him. I'll be listening to Deborah, who you just spoke to. I'll be listening to other experts. We have a lot of people that are very good at this. And ultimately, it's a balancing act. But, you know, the expression, we can do two things at one time.
That's the president. Here's the vice president yesterday.
We focused on efforts at mitigation, at testing, and supplies. We discussed the president's recent approval of disaster declarations for Washington. And California and New York, but we also assured governors who've submitted major disaster declarations that we will be reviewing them in an expeditious manner to ensure the full resources the federal government are brought to bear.
All right, so that's talking about actually the coronavirus and where we go forward from this particular point, and the question that's been asked all along, which is and it's a legit question to ask, is the cure worse than the disease? So we'll get to that coming up here in just a little bit. But I guess sort of breaking news, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin say they briefed President Trump late last night on a forthcoming massive stimulus agreement and predicted they would finalize a deal on Tuesday. Mm. The president would like to have a deal, and he's hoping that we can conclude this tomorrow, Mnuchin told reporters after leaving Schumer's office for the final time early Tuesday morning. Schumer added that Mnuchin called the president during their meeting and told them they were very, very close to an agreement. He seemed very happy with that. Trump knocked Democrats in a tweet minutes after Mnuchin had gone into Schumer's office for another meeting. He said, quote, Republicans had a deal under Nancy Pelosi, rode into town from her extended vacation. The Democrats want the virus to win. They are asking for things that have nothing to do with our great workers or companies, he tweeted. Both Mnuchin and Schumer downplayed questions about if Trump was raising concerns about their negotiations. Mnuchin suggested it was about ideas being floated by House Democrats who introduced their own bill on Monday. He seemed very positive, Schumer added. The two say that they are at the cusp of a roughly $2 trillion stimulus package that is expected to provide direct tax rebates to some Americans, bolster unemployment insurance, provide approximately $377 billion for small businesses and hundreds of billions of dollars for impacted industries like airlines. Schumer said, I'm pleased that our two main issues, workers first and a Marshall Plan for hospitals, are very strong on the list. The forthcoming agreement will include $100 billion for hospitals. A source familiar with the talks told The Hill, we expect to have an agreement tomorrow morning. There are still a few little differences. Neither of us think that they're in any way going to get in the way of the final agreement. White House Director of Legislative Affairs Eric Ulan said that there were not that many issues left unresolved. Mnuchin added that staff were still busy drafting and reviewing the language. Still documents that are going to be reviewed tonight and turned around. There's still a couple of open issues, but I think we're very hopeful that this can be closed out tomorrow, he said. Now, the question that I have was, you know, was Mnuchin being advised at all by Mitch McConnell and the Senate Republican bill on this? Look, we know that the Democrats, if you saw some of the things in the bill yesterday, just absolutely outrageous.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You know, talking about climate change and windmills and solar panels. Now, the one thing that I was thinking of, and I again, because this question had come up, what do windmills and solar panels have to do with the coronavirus? Would I be correct in assuming that the Democrats are stating that if the wind turbines are spinning very quickly, that any airborne virus can be killed when they are crashed upon by the blades of that wind turbine?
No, I was looking at it from the opposite. I think they want those wind turbines, since it is airborne, to push the virus even further into the public. Tell me where I'm wrong, you can't.
Well, you can throw that back at Nancy Pelosi's daughter.
Yeah, the whole you know, again, this is their time to get their agenda done.
Yeah, because when you look at it, you know, the fact is, and here's how it shows it was completely bogus. Mm-hmm. Because if they get everything that the president wants, and the president wants all the help for the corporations,
right,
that the Democrats were trying to make was their biggest objection yesterday, were they not?
Right.
But was that really their biggest objection? Because you really can't make that point when you throw in everything that that they had put out, the solar and the solar and wind credits to fund NASA's Environmental Restoration Group to study climate mitigation efforts. You look at a lot of the things that they had in there. And they were completely and totally asinine. The GOP Senate bill was 500 pages. The Pelosi bill read at 1,120 pages. Reportedly, there's another version, according to David Harzeni from the New York Post yesterday. There was another rescue bill circulating that was 1,400 pages long. And the thing is, we already know Democrats can't make the case. And if you support Democrats, you can't make the case that this involved just coronavirus and disaster aid for coronavirus,
right,
for both corporations and business. You
right.
can't make that case.
Right.
Why? Because the Hill.com and other media picking up on it. Majority Whip Jim Clyburn last week stating that this is a tremendous opportunity to restructure things to fit our vision.
Yep. They know what they're doing.
And we said that. We did this, what, last Thursday or whenever he said it? It was probably last Thursday,
right,
show.
Right, right.
That we had talked about this. So,
On impeachment, you know, Nancy, we've got to get this done. Oh, I'm going to hold it for 30 days.
Yeah.
They don't give a damn about the people's business. And right now, they don't care anything about this virus.
Well, the only thing that they're starting to realize is the fact that, you know, the pressure was on. Republicans were pounding them, and it was really tough. I saw a few people on Democrats on social media try to make the case on helping out businesses, that it, basically it's corporate welfare and there's no reason to do it. Oh, by the way, the whole thing on the airlines, you see that to reduce airlines emissions by 50% over a particular period of time. And somebody said, what the hell is to do with you're trying to kill the airlines?
Right.
The bookings are down. They say in some cases 90%. And the story in the Wall Street Journal stating that airlines may just shut down completely, either through government edict or the fact that they're just flying with a couple of passengers.
Right. And they can't afford to fly. They can't afford to burn that fuel. And what are you going to do? You're going to mandate that half of their fleet be gliders?
Yeah,
we're going to have airline gliders. What do you mean reduce emissions? Based on what? Based on what?
Well,
I mean, the only thing you could do is do what? Go to what, smaller planes that then reduce their fuel consumption? And then the demand would dictate that you would need twice as many planes.
I don't know that the American Airlines forced.
Yeah.
What do you mean the American Airlines forced? Well, we had to plant trees.
Yeah, right.
And what does that have to do with? We have no idea, but we just did it because we want to stay in business. How about they
mandate that they shut the engines off for the last 30 miles of the trip?
Glide in. We need
it's just insane.
We need glide in planes.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, that's where I started. You know, we'll just mandate that, you know, half of their fleet be gliders. We'll it's like the CAFE standards, you know, on autos. We'll just start changing it to where we'll have electric planes. Let's solar planes. That. You know, let's just stupid this thing to death.
Well, but the solar plane flew around the world. It shows that we can have solar planes.
Yeah, right. We lost contact with them 9 times. And there was one person aboard.
Well, I mean, it's you can't make... They were absolutely blunt about it. And the only reason that... I do think that they got pounded yesterday and Schumer realized, okay, we got to come to it. We're not winning this.
Right.
And they weren't winning it. You even had Democrats that were saying, "Yeah, this looks really, really bad." And we said it from the very beginning that if you look at this, you've got to give a tremendous amount of help. You have to,
yeah,
because businesses are shutting down. And to sit there and say that businesses, for example, that are helped must provide the minimum wage or must. You see the one thing about board of directors must have a union member on it.
Right.
Things like that that were being dictated because they wanted their liberal, what they view a liberal nirvana.
Yeah.
They were putting things in that had nothing to do with helping Americans. And like I said, you can't win this argument because Clyburn made it clear last week. This is a tremendous opportunity to restructure things to fit our vision. We said this early on. Democrats don't care. They care about the politics of it. And I do think they felt some of the pressure yesterday. We'll see what the eventual thing is and whether the president collapsed completely on this and gave way to all the, you know, the liberal agenda. Remember, Mitch McConnell must be sitting there going, "I can't believe I said what I said last week." Remember?
Right. Yeah.
You guys, you know, gag and then suck it up. We'll get what we want in the Republican bill.
Thanks for opening the door.
Yeah. Where's the Republican bill?
Right.
From what I know, there's only a Mnuchin and Schumer bill here at the moment. And will the president crumble completely just because will the Democrats be successful? Here's the question. Will the Democrats be successful in crumbling the Republicans completely who are in the majority? And putting the onus back on them, we'll see tomorrow. It depends what's in the bill. But if Democrats are helping and getting all the money that the president and Republicans wanted for the businesses out there, then it takes away their initial argument that that's what it was about.
Right. I mean, you're going to punish business, and this is what they're about. They don't care.
Well,
they don't care because, you know, when Schumer, it was, I think, Sunday when he tweeted, you know, we've got to help these. We're helping big business and we're not helping people. You moron. When you help big business, you help people. It helps them stay employed.
Well, and they increased unemployment benefits and the money going to individuals
right
across the country. You can't make that case.
Right.
When you say that, it's not true.
Because what he wanted was he wanted a mandate basically that you can't lay anybody off and you've got to have, you know, all these things that added on to it where you mandate business to death.
Well, I think if we mandate business, we ought to mandate to people what they do with their money.
Exactly. It can only be spent on these items.
Right. Going to mandate it to business. If you're going to mandate it to that, mandate it to individuals,
right,
too.
Right.
If the government's going to control everything, they ought to control what you do with
the
money.
That's right.
What they do, what you do with their money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I made the point that Elon Musk was like, "Oh yeah, we'll start making ventilators," you know, and I thought, yeah. Well, that, you know, that's only justice because he got so much of his money from federal funds that it's going back to the people. At least it's going to go back to the people.
By the way, when I said it was government, it was their money.
Yes.
That was the joke. I was kidding. It's
exactly.
Not their money.
It's everybody else's money. It's our money. They're spending everybody else's money.
I had to qualify that. Otherwise, somebody would call and say, "That's not true."
I say everybody in Congress take a one-year pay cut of 100%. Who's with me? I know it doesn't do anything when you're talking about $4 trillion.
By the way, I saw all these hands go up out there,
yeah.
And even though this is radio, I could still see all the hands.
Yeah, all the hands.
Ooh,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, because when they're okay with spending your money, they're okay with spending the money of people who were working 80, 90 hours a week. They're okay with that. You know, they're safe in their zone. And when it comes to their money, oh, no, 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 no. You can't touch it. Executive order tomorrow. Trump, We understand, I'm just going to start a rumor, we understand Trump is going to put in an executive order that everyone in Congress donate their money, 100% of their earnings. By the way, just like he does. He does not take a pay check.
Don't we live in interesting times now, though the Democrats demanding that Trump be more of a dictator?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's just...
And Trump's saying, I don't have to be a dictator in these cases because I don't need to tell companies what to do.
Right.
They're doing it on their own.
Right.
They're coming forward to me.
I love the question the other day. How much has your businesses, how much have you lost personally asking a man who doesn't take a paycheck from the government?
Yeah. Well, the fact is, the only way he can answer is, I don't know.
Exactly. I don't keep track of that.
Yeah.
And he's lost a ton of money just by running for president.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Carley.
When people are getting sick, when people are dying from the coronavirus, when we are facing unemployment rates, which could go as high as 20%, surely we ought to be able to pull together and work quickly to respond to the needs of the American people.
That's Senator Susan Collins yesterday on the coronavirus after the Democrats again kept the procedural voting from going. We'll see what we'll see. And by the way, we'll see if there's any leaking coming out as to what's in the new deal. Sorry, the new deal.
Is it the new Green Deal? Let's hope it's not that.
Well, the old one would have been the new Green Deal, right?
Yeah.
We'll see if anything's leaking out as to what's in it. We told you about what the Democrats had put in yesterday and why it was bogus, what they were trying to sell the American public, especially if Schumer has agreed to everything that the Republicans wanted to begin with, then it never was about what they originally said it was. And like we said, with Jim Clyburn coming out last week and stating, remember, the majority whip stating to his colleagues, this was to the Democrats, as reported by The Hill and other non-conservative Republican magazines and media outlets, that this is a tremendous opportunity to restructure things to fit our vision, not to help people, not to provide disaster aid and ensure that people have medical care and that businesses can get back on their feet. But it was a tremendous opportunity to restructure things to fit our vision, end of quote. And yesterday proved that's exactly what it was. That's what the Democrats wanted to see if they could do with this opportunity, because you never let a crisis go to waste.
Here's your forecast.
A fairly potent weather system that was in the Mississippi Valley and Tennessee Valley yesterday continues to shift eastward this morning for the areas north of New York City into Boston, upstate New York, and into Maine. We'll see snowfall for the New England states. For the remainder of the south, though, still partly to mostly cloudy, we'll continue to see rain showers there. But the bulk of the showers will now shift to portions of Kansas, Oklahoma, and Arkansas, where severe weather is potentially possible. For most of the Midwest and Mid-Atlantic, we'll be drying out today. Out to the Intermountain West, heavy snow for Idaho, Montana, and especially western Wyoming continues. For Salt Lake City, Utah, mainly rain. Now, by tomorrow night, we'll see that rain snow become a potential mix for Salt Lake City, with a low in the lower 30s. There's your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
People want to be BS'd. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. This story here that came out late last night from the Wall Street Journal. U.S. There's a headline, U.S. domestic passenger flights could virtually shut down voluntarily or by government order. Major U.S. airlines are drafting plans for a potential voluntary shutdown of virtually all passenger flights across the U.S., according to industry and federal officials, as government agencies also consider ordering such a move. And the nation's air traffic control system continues to be ravaged by the coronavirus contagion. No final decisions have been made by the carriers or the White House, these officials said, as airlines struggle to keep aircraft flying with minimal passengers. Various options are under consideration, these people have said. But amid the quickly spreading pandemic and mandatory stay-at-home orders covering some 80 million U.S. Residents, airline executives, pilot union leaders, and others are stating that this might, you know, this might have to happen. And well, and I was reading the other day? I'll see if I can find the story, or just yesterday, probably in the last few hours I was reading. It's like we scan so much that Florida is considering that if you're coming from New York, whatever. Sorry,
right? I don't know how they would do that. I mean, you would have to put checkpoints on all the borders, right? It could only be done through flights.
Yeah,
on the interstates, you're not going to be able to control that. Because people in New York are going to get on I-95 and they're just going to drive south. And I mean, in terms of those who want to be there. And there's no way to really set up checkpoints unless you start deploying, if you had a deployment, I guess, of the National Guard.
U.S. airlines have already eliminated the vast majority of international flying and have announced plans to cut back domestic flying by as much as 40%. Travelers are staying home at even greater rates. The TSA reported that passenger flow at its checkpoints was down more than 80% Sunday from the same day a year earlier.
Wow.
On Monday, thousands of flights were canceled in some cases because planes were not full enough to justify the trip, with passengers numbering in just the single digits. Some planes that did take off have been emptier than ever before. For example, a flight between New York and Washington had just 3 passengers.
Wow.
American Airlines and United Airlines canceled over 40% of scheduled flights on Monday. Some airline officials expect planes to be emptier as the week goes on. Officials at Airlines for America, a leading trade association representing domestic carriers, did not immediately respond for comments. Before the pandemic, U.S. airlines operated more than 8.4 million flights annually. Airlines are preparing for the possibility that the contagion-driven staffing emergencies at air traffic control facilities could force the issue, making it impossible to continue operating in parts of the country.
Yeah.
So there's, you know,
and you really, if you're an airliner, what choice do you have? You're going to continue to spend all that fuel for 3 people? I mean, you're not. You can't. You'll be bankrupt. You know, someone made the point the other day. Actually, it was over the weekend. There were a couple of articles that came out over the weekend that were pretty interesting. What's the rule of thumb? What would any person tell you, a Dave Ramsey-type person, tell you as an individual you need to be prepared for in savings? 6 months. You have a number of companies that are over-leveraged like crazy, and they run that way. Now, there are some debt-free companies. There are some, but they're few and far between.
Well, but one of the problems, I forgot where I was reading again last week, it just popped into my head, reading last week, that part of the problem is interest rates have been so low that it's been so easy to borrow money.
Exactly.
Because the interest rates are so low, well, so companies are doing it and leverage themselves. And as we've said, look, we as a country, we manipulate our currency when we manipulate our interest rate.
Right.
And we've been manipulating our interest rate.
Yep.
But you know, everybody seems to be for it. We're not.
No.
But everybody seems to be in favor of it.
Well, and this is, I think, you know, the question that we have to have going forward. Because this is a unique, unprecedented situation.
Yes.
But we're going to throw trillions and trillions of dollars at this. And the question is, what changes in terms of the behavior? Someone, and I have to go back and find if it was National Review, one of the conservative websites, and I don't know who wrote it, who wrote the piece, but I'll go find it. Let the cruise ship industry, or let the cruise ship companies, let the cruise lines go under.
Mm-hmm.
They don't serve a vital role, making the point that many of them only have, in terms of the American workforce, makes up only like 4% of their labor. So we're bailing out companies who serve what purpose, and these are all the discussions that are going to be had on the other side of this. I mean, I expect them to throw money at every industry, but the fact of the matter is there are vital industries like the trucking industry, which right now, of course, is, I mean, I don't know if you want to say booming. I think that's the wrong word, but working very hard.
Busy.
Very busy. We went from, I mean, the trucking industry went from having way too much capacity to having, you know, now very little capacity in just a few weeks. And it's not for the right reason. It's not for a fundamental reason. Necessarily.
It's a toilet paper reason.
It really is a toilet paper. Did you see where they caught the one driver hauling toilet paper? And I don't know if that was supposed to be the load he was carrying or she was carrying. I didn't get the entire gist of the story, but it made it look like it was illegal. And I thought, well, wait a minute. Is that hoarding or is that somebody that's hauling supplies to even a nonprofit? Right.
Mm-hmm.
So you see a lot of the craziness that is out there. And the question is, what changes in terms of the behavior of the private sector on the other side of this? And who deserves to get bailed out, right? You have people who, and we've talked about this over the years. You kind of alluded to it earlier. Should the government just tell you and set very strict standards on how you can spend the stimulus, the money that you get, the check you get, if they say it's only good for rent, groceries, or mortgage payments, or gasoline, you can't, of course, what else is open, right?
Pot. I mean,
right? Well, pot stores are open. But, but seriously, liquor stores?
Did you see in some of the states that...
Yeah, that they're keeping them open?
Some of the essential businesses are liquor stores
yes.
and pot.
Right. Right. Does that make sense?
The Ramones should have sang a song on this. We want to keep society sedated.
Exactly. Well, I mean, you know, is that a good idea right now? Don't we need people thinking clearly? Remember Jerry Brown when he signed it in when he was governor of California?
Yeah.
He signed it into law and he said, but everybody needs to look, we need to be, you know, smart about this because some people are going to have to be productive, basically saying not everybody can be high all the time. I mean,
yes.
but the fact of the matter is, I mean, there was that cruise ship. Remember the cruise ship that was stranded? That was the Carnival. I was on this.
Something or other.
Yeah, Triumph. The Carnival Triumph. It was stranded in the Gulf. And at one point, according to the passengers, they started serving free alcohol, which is a bad idea. You know, you think it will boost morale, but of course, when it's free, people go overboard. And not literally, but they, you know, drink too much. And, of course, that created more problems, don't we? I think we need to, and of course, this coming from somebody who is a true libertarian, and I don't want the government telling us what we need to do. But the fact of the matter is we as society should be smart about what we're going to be doing. If you're going to be holed up for the next few weeks in your home, you do what you need to do. But if we're going to get back to being productive, we got to be smart about it. But the fact of the matter is, I think there is going to be some change in behavior by the individual. But is there a change in behavior when we keep bailing out again and again and again? This will dwarf the 2008, 2009, the whole TARP thing and the GM bailout thing. This will make that look like you know, a $5 check.
Oh, yeah, with the at least. Oh, and by the way, people are calling to talk about the specifics of the plan.
Right.
And they're calling up talking about the Republican Senate plan.
Right, yeah.
Or the Democrat House plan.
House plan.
There's a new plan. Now, right. It may contain parts of both.
Right.
But we don't know what's in it.
We don't know the whole thing.
As of yet, we don't know the specifics of what's in the new bill. So a lot of people want to talk about the other things. But believing that it's the bill that's going to be up, that's going to be agreed by the president and Mnuchin and Schumer tomorrow, and we don't know if that's the case.
Right.
Just so you know. But, yeah, I mean, this hasn't happened in 103 years.
Right. I mean, it's and imagine, first of all, we should be grateful, thankful. I thank God we have the workforce that we have, but also that we have the technology we have. You know, the technology and infrastructure. We are much, much better prepared for something like this than they were during the flu epidemic, without a doubt. And that is saving lives. But we also have a huge, much, much bigger government. And, you know, the president, you and I talked about it over the last couple of shows on Friday and then on the Monday show, talked about how people are going to get restless. You're going to start hearing people cry out, look, my small business is dying, or I can't make the bill as a, you know, as an individual employee. I can't make my bills. I can't pay my rent. And the president alluded to it today. He said, look, we've got to get back to work. You know, there at some point we're going to have to open things back up.
Well,
and it's going to have to be soon.
Right. You can't do it for months. By the way, well, we will talk about this in more details, but Andrew Cuomo, the story came out yesterday. They will begin to test the coronavirus treatments today
in New York.
In New York, and that is the hydroxychloroquine and the Z-Pack together.
Right. Okay.
By the way, it was funny to see social media yesterday. Yeah. Oh, so it's just a regular flu because it's a Z-Pack.
Yeah. No, it's a combination.
It's like, no, it's a combination of
right.
Of both of those drugs. They will start it. They will start it tomorrow.
Well, and you know, you and I suspected yesterday that there's no way that they're not at this point, especially with Dr. Fauci on board, that the FDA, given the administration's, I think, stance on this, that they're not going to fast track this, that they're not going to, because you and I talked about how if Cuomo's doing it, if he's testing it, if they're looking at that on a state level, then you can see on a national level the FDA being probably monitoring and being involved in that. I don't know for sure on those details, but they certainly want the data from that to make sure that it's going to be effective without causing irreparable harm.
We'll get into the specifics of how many doses they actually have right now in New York State, and it's quite a few. If you look at the number of cases they have, they can basically cover at least half right now just with the Z-Packs.
Wow.
And that was as of Sunday. You just wonder if you really go into production, they might be able to cover everybody who has it. I don't know if the clinical trial will be that big because they say the worst patients first, but they should be able to give the treatment, and that would be the treatment of the hydroxychloroquine and the Z-Pack. They should be able to give to every single seriously ill patient of the coronavirus.
Wow, that's huge.
Yep. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. If you'd like to get aboard, we'll get to your calls and comments coming up following the top of the hour. Plus, looking at, you know, as we talk about flattening the curve and looking, for example, if we want to discount China and say everything we can't believe from theirs,
right.
You know, whether it's legit or not, you can look at South Korea. And South Korea, it's basically been 32 days, and they actually had a downtick. You see the curve now for the first time yesterday actually heading down.
Hmm.
And that's 32 days. We're into day 18 right now.
Right.
So if you see, there is no bending of the curve yet. We're still going up, and they were still going up really until where they started moderating the curve was about 18, 19, 20 days.
Okay.
It was still going up, but it started it wasn't going up as quickly.
Right.
So, we're in that time period right now to see. And again, the difference may be in South Korea, they've only tested, from what I saw, 1 out of 160 people. With the acceleration here of the number of tests, especially in the hot spots, I don't know if you can make a direct comparison or not.
Right.
This hour's news is brought to you by Travel Centers of America, home of World Lens Coffee, the freshest roast on the road.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley. Welcome and good morning.
This hour for Freightliner, Run Smart, helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
You know, we've talked about this not a lot, but when it comes up, we talk about it a lot. And, it was brought up, yesterday, Elizabeth Warren all over the whole thing, that any company that gets help, whatever the help might be, that they cannot use that money or any other money in the future after they pay back the loans. They can never buy back their own stock.
Yeah, right.
Why do people believe that that's bad if a company buys back their own stock?
Right.
Not every company is in growth mode.
Right.
And if a company buys back their own stock, the other investors, they have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
They can say, okay, I'm going to sell my stock.
Mm-hmm.
And you actually give an opportunity for other shareholders to, number one, sell their stock. Sell their stock, pay the taxes, and then take that money and invest it in even a company that they believe is more pro-growth.
Right.
And the reason that the investors may sell the stock back to the company is because they view the company is not in a growth potential at that moment. And therefore, it gives them an opportunity to reinvest cash into businesses that they believe are growing. Why is that bad?
Well, it is this control of business that the government must have. Who are they really protecting? They do this under the guise that they are protecting the small guy. No. The fact of the matter is, if a publicly traded company starts to buy back its own stock, it's trying to do what? Gain a little bit of sure footing. I mean, we can go through the books of every company, every publicly traded company out there, and sit and rabbit hole this whole thing to death and say, well, they did this wrong or they did that wrong. Okay, great. Let's talk about the people who get welfare and what they do with their money. How about we start drug testing? Oh, no, you can't do that. That's racist. Well, companies, when they're trying to gain sure footing, if they are able to do that with anything that they do on their stock, then that is something that helps to ensure that the employees of that company remain employed.
Well, I want to read from the Wall Street Journal editorial from the other day. This is why Warren Buffett has never paid dividends but does buy back its stock. Progressives love to quote Mr. Buffett when he argues for higher tax rates, but they never mention his view on buybacks. Mm-hmm. Some opponents of buybacks, including Senator Marco Rubio, hardly a progressive, argued that they waste company cash that ought to be reinvested in plant and equipment. But not every company is in growth mode.
Right.
And even those that are might have more cash than growth ideas. Within Mr. Buffett's portfolio of companies, if See's Candies is showing a huge profit, do we really need to insist that it build more stores? Maybe there are already enough stores.
Right.
Paying money out to shareholders frees them to reinvest in new companies with big growth ideas. This is the best way to promote growth for the economy as a whole. At a time like this, when so many sacrifices are being made for the sake of the health of the overall community, surely we don't want to force companies to hoard their capital any more than we want people to hoard toilet paper. Democrats are trying to use the firms most in distress now to set a precedent for depriving ordinary investors and the economy as a whole of the benefits of share buybacks. We can have a debate about buybacks and the $15 minimum wage and everything else on the progressive list of demands, but let's have a debate, not blackmail, and let's have it after the crisis has passed. Yeah. So there you go. And that was written by the chief investment officer of Trend Microanalytics. That would be, let me just see, let me get his first name here, Donald Luskin.
Okay.
So, but I, you know, it was just when you look at, when I saw that the other day, I just went, well, because everybody goes crazy over the stock buybacks. And I'm like, I've never understood it. You make it seem like they're giving money to the mob.
Yeah.
That's the way it comes across.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
No, you're simply saying we're going to buy back some of our own stock, which means, you know, investors can voluntarily say, all right, I'm willing to sell.
Right.
And then they can take that money, and most likely they're going to take that money. If it's a very fast growth company, you're not going to find investors to probably sell it.
Hmm.
But if the growth is down, investors are more willing to sell it, right?
Yeah,
and then
sure.
take that money and say, fine, I'm out. Let me put it over here.
Right.
Where there's faster growth.
Exactly.
That's a good thing, is it not?
Yes. Well, again, you're the government trying to run business. You know, again, the publicly traded companies, people can choose to invest or not. That's how it works. It's that simple. They can choose to buy or sell. I mean, we're seeing this right now.
Yeah, we are.
You're seeing
the
huge sell-off because should people not be able to sell right now? I mean, individuals. Because here's what she would go for, right? Elizabeth Warren or the Bernies of the world. Well, only the individual could, you know, that makes below 100,000 could sell the stock in Southwest Airlines or Apple. Right now, only they can. If you're a millionaire, if you make more than $1 million a year or more, you can't sell back this. You can't sell your stock.
Right.
No, it doesn't work that way.
No, it doesn't. It just and the thing is, I mean, with the Warren plant. Now, I don't know if that's in the new bill,
right?
But in the old bill, it was okay. You can't if you take the aid, you can't buy back your shares with this money, or after you pay it off, after you pay the loan off,
yeah,
you still can never take. You can still never buy back your stock again.
Exactly.
Come on. It's asinine.
Yeah, it is insane. And it is, again, trying to, because there's, I mean, that's capitalism at work. Look, if you go out and you invest in a, you know, 1,000 shares of a company, and then that company fails, you lose money too. Rich people lose money all the time. There's no telling how much I think I did see it, that Warren Buffett losing billions. Of course they're losing billions. You know, they'll get it back eventually, or the stocks they own will come back. But we live in this bubble created by fear. Right now we're in this weird dome. It's a bubble. It's a national bubble. And it's really a situational bubble in that we're all fearful and we're, you know, insanely jealous of what other people have and how they're able to weather a storm better than we are. And there's no room for that. There isn't. We're going to get through this. It's going to happen very quickly, I believe. When you look at the promise of the drug combination, then I think right now that's the great hope. And if we start seeing those studies play out very quickly, and I don't know the length of the study in New York. Did you see it? Was it 30 days? I'm not sure sometimes they're 30 days, sometimes they're 6 weeks. It varies by the drug and everything else. But keep in mind, the two positives here is that these are drugs that are already on the market. When you talk about research and development, R&D, at the pharma level, sometimes they'll go through, remember there's this debate about how long should they have the patent?
You know?
Okay. Many times, a big pharma will spend, a ton of money, hundreds of millions of dollars on research and development for a drug. And it'll get there before they get to approval. It's 12 years, and that's 12 years into that patent. So their first 12 years is research and development. Then they get 8 years on the market to try and recover cost, right, before it goes to generic. We can have that debate. The point is, you know, about whether it should be 20 years or 25 years or what it should be, or whether it should be 10 years or whether, you know, again. But the fact of the matter is this, is that these drugs are not in R&D mode, although there is, again, we still have to do testing. They are already available. Big Pharma is already stepping up saying we'll produce more and produce what we need. You've got the governor of New York. Cuomo, you asked the question. Is the liberal media calling him Hitler? When the president talks about giving using a combination of the same drugs.
The former CNN reporter made the comparison to Hitler.
To Hitler. This is what Hitler did.
Right.
Well, you're going to make the comparison to Governor Cuomo? Well, you shouldn't. Governor Cuomo is doing the right thing. By the way, one of the rare times I'll say that. So you can record it. I'll say it again. Go ahead, hit your recorder right now if you want to. 3, 2, 1. Governor Cuomo is doing the right thing. You can play that all over social media if you want to.
By the way, the FDA commissioner says the anti-malaria drug touted by Trump might have some benefit.
Might, yeah, right.
After he was completely and totally criticized and mocked the other day for bringing it up.
Right.
Now Governor Cuomo has come aboard. We'll get to some of the stats about how many doses they have coming up here in just a little bit, because it's really interesting what's going to go on in New York. And the trials start today.
Yeah.
And so if they get it today, and we'll tell you, number one, we'll go through some of the numbers there, how many doses they actually have. And it looks like that every single person who is, from what I can see, every single person who has it in any type of serious way can get the drugs.
Yeah.
And so in 6 days, they're going to know.
Right. If that's how large, if they expand the study out. By the way, if you're doing the study, why would you not expand it out to that extent? If they're in the most serious situation, the most dire situations. I'm just asking a question. I'm not saying it should be done. I'm just asking what would be the reason not to do that. And we'll find out soon enough. But we can all hope and pray, first of all, for those poor souls who are suffering with the worst effects of this virus and disease, that it works. And, of course, for our nation, that it gets us back to where we are, where we should be.
Yeah, some of the stats on this coming up, plus your calls and comments, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on Road Check 2020. Road Check arrives early. Every year around this time, we all find out when the CVSA will be holding the International Road Check, the annual event that highlights the importance of roadside inspections. The 2020 Road Check is scheduled for May 5th through the 7th across North America. If that date sounds a bit early to you, that's because it is. Traditionally, Road Check took place about a month later in the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. But officials opted for an earlier date this year to try to avoid the hotter weather that covers much of the southern U.S. and Mexico in June. While you may get a break from the warm weather with the May date, you will not get a pass from inspectors should your vehicle or your records fail the inspection. Now that we know when the road check is happening this year, it's a good time to make sure that your records and your vehicle are ready to pass an inspection. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour for Freightliner, run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
Let's go to Brian in Denton, Texas. Brian, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Very good.
Anyway, not to bug you, no pun intended, but do you remember that whack job out in California, Cynthia McKinney? She was a representative in that Southern California district. She's retired now. She got voted out. Or
Don't ask us questions. Make your point, if you would please.
Yeah. Okay, well, anyway, those guys, even if they don't win re-election, the squad, as they're commonly referred to, they're going to get paid their annual salary the rest of their natural lives, whether they work or another...
No, they don't.
No, they don't.
You don't get paid. One of the biggest things, and you'll see it all the time on the fact checkers, where people will say, you'll see the meme out there saying that once they retire, you know, once they leave Congress, they get that money for the rest of their lives.
No, they don't.
They get a portion of it, depending on how long they've served at their retirement, the retirement age, I believe, is earlier than 65, but they don't get it. If somebody serves one term in Congress, and they serve 2 years, they don't collect that salary for the rest of their lives.
No, that is not the case. They don't.
So just wanted to make that clear. And look, I don't think that's what drives them anyway. What drives them is they wish, you know, somebody, if you talk about the squad, you got somebody like AOC. She wishes to push her socialist / communist agenda. That's, you know, but that's what she wants to do. But if she's out of office, let's say she loses this year, she does not collect money for the rest of her life at the same salary.
Right,
that doesn't happen.
Right. Yeah. So look. You know, I made the joke about it earlier. They should forego their salary for a year. They would have to actually all together. They would have to vote on that bill, and that's not going to happen. It is the mentality, just trying to make the point that they love spending other people's money. They don't care about spending your money. They don't care about going into debt. They don't care about your children and grandchildren and their grandchildren that will have to eventually deal with all of this mess. But guess what? The American people don't care either, by and large. Our audience notwithstanding, tell me the talk about reducing the debt, reducing the deficit. Where is it?
Yeah.
I mean, before we get to coronavirus, where is it?
Right. Yeah, the American public doesn't care. Look, we sit there and say, well, they want to collect their salary. Well, we want to put our debt on future generations.
Yes.
Is that any more moral?
Right.
We of a nation have decided to, and the Republican Party, and it happened magically over just a couple of years period that was so concerned with the deficit. Now it's not a major concern with Republicans at all.
Nope.
You, it might be, our listeners, but for the Republican Party overall, nope, it has disappeared.
Yep.
And as we've said, that's why it's not talked about much, because it's very uncomfortable to sit there and say, you want to put what you want today on your children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Because by saying that doesn't make people feel really good.
No.
But it's in reality what we're doing, and we're okay with it. So before we get on our high horse and start saying they want to collect their salary and well, you want to get free stuff on your grandchildren.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it is, and it's over and over again.
Right. So what's the difference? Do we get on our high horses and say we're better? We're more pure? Hey, gimme, 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 gimme. I want the free stuff. And what they, and this is a beautiful thing. I'm going to get the free stuff from the billionaires out there
yeah.
when we see that the majority of the new spending comes from what? Debt.
Yes. Of course. You know, it's those awful words, deficit spending. Mm-hmm. And we're just going to, the long-term damage. Honestly, the long-term damage will be felt when it hits to a point where we can no longer service the interest on the debt that we have.
When interest rates eventually go back up again.
Yep. Then mm-hmm. guess what? Those generations ahead of us or behind us are going to have to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about an epidemic. I don't know how you fix that.
Pure Chaos, Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
He's Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour for Freightliner, run smart, helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
So what's going to happen today in New York, our drug trials are going to start. And Cuomo said late Sunday that 750,000 doses of chloroquine, 70,000 doses of hydroxychloroquine, and 10,000 doses of Z-Pak were acquired by New York State for the trial. Well, so if you've got, and what they've said is if you look at the clinical trials that have been done on a small sample, and this was brought up in the op-ed piece, I think it's Dr. Hithorn, who was the head of infectious diseases at University of Kansas.
Yeah.
And they did the study and wrote the op-ed piece and said, look, we believe this works. And you're not talking about politicians stating it. You're saying people that are involved in it and understand infectious diseases. And that's on top of the French study that was done. So they said, okay, this is a whole different ballgame. We need to try it. So if you've got how many, what is the 20,000 total cases right now
mm-hmm.
and 13,000 in the New York area, I believe it. Well, 13,000 in New York and I think probably in the surrounding area, probably close to 15, 16, 17,000 if you take the suburbs and Long Island and things like that.
Right.
Is total, what you have.
Total active cases right now, 22,939 in the whole state.
In the entire state. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if and the majority are not serious, but if you got 10,000 Z packs and 70,000 doses of hydroxychloroquine, well, then from what I can see, since the majority of people are not serious,
mm-hmm.
and that's who they want to first test because it's also effective. They said it's effective as soon as you get it, but even if you're into it, you know, a few days and you're serious, that they believe it also helps. In that sample quadrant also, but you've got plenty right at that point.
Mm-hmm. Right
now, if you need more Z packs,
right,
they can be produced quite quickly. I'm assuming by pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah, I don't know the production rate, but we do know that there has been cooperation, certainly the will by those pharma companies to provide the zithromycin. And I don't know. I'm not sure what the production rate is. But if all efforts are in that direction, you imagine. And how many Z-Packs was it? 7,000?
10,000.
10,000.
10,000 doses.
Okay. So, I mean, you do the math.
And
the active cases right now, that's roughly half, just under half of the active cases in New York right now.
Right.
And so, and you can assume that the overwhelming majority aren't in that very serious or critical condition. I'm not sure how it applies, by the way.
Well, but what they said is they're going to use it for the most critical cases
exactly,
first.
Exactly. That's my point, right. Is that if you've got 10,000, then that covers half of the active cases. Well, half of the active cases are not critical by statistics. We don't know that. I mean, I don't have it in front of me how many are, but you would I would assume that 10,000 would cover those critical cases in New York State. So if that's the case, then you could look at a wide study. I think I don't know anybody that wouldn't be in support of that unless it's somebody from the medical community, again, that wants to be more cautious. I don't know. This is unprecedented even for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so, it, you know, but again, the positives are that these are two drugs who are far beyond research and development. They are on the market now. And that's a positive. It's just about how it affects people with this condition.
We know it. We know what the side effect is. And, you know, one of the things is a concern of the dosage, because you did see, was it the CNN article?
Yeah.
That talked about, was it in Nigeria or something, that somebody tried it and died because it was too much, that whatever, I forgot what the dosage was. But this dosage can kill you.
Well, right.
Duh, that's why it's a prescription. But apparently the University of Kansas had no loss of life.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I know, the French had no loss of life. So apparently somebody in the medical community has figured out the dosage. And if they're starting the clinical trials today, then they know what the dosage is.
Right, exactly.
What a safe dosage would be.
Right, exactly. I mean, this could happen very quickly.
But isn't it, if you want to see the media bias, see how it's changed over the last couple of days. When Trump suggested it and he was mocked, the former CNN reporter referenced him to Hitler and experimenting on people. This is what Hitler did. Medical experiments on innocent people, as if it's the same thing. Yeah, the article, the article out there, I won't say if it wasn't CNN, I don't want to say it, but the article that has gotten a lot of press that said people can die of an overdose of this. It's like, well, nobody said to give them a lethal overdose of it.
Yeah, right.
We already know what you can give for malaria, or which would be the chloroquine hydroxychloroquine,
right,
which is used for for lupus,
right,
and arthritis.
Yeah, yeah.
And they already know what the dosage is for that. Right. I haven't seen anybody talk about a lethal dosage. But the media brought that up, and it was, you know, Trump was being mocked for it. As soon as Cuomo said, well, let's go that way, I think it's a pretty good idea. Any mocking of Cuomo?
Nope.
Wow, how forward-thinking he is.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
He's going to be
called brave. Right. He's going to be called a pioneer, a revolutionary in the war against the coronavirus. By the way, again, I agree with Governor Cuomo. I support Governor Cuomo in this effort.
The French study that Trump promoted on Twitter Saturday found early evidence that taking a combination of hydroxychloroquine and the Z-Pak could be effective in treating the coronavirus. So, you know, that's where we are. That's where we are right now. And the FDA, the head of the FDA, here's the latest here.
Hmm.
Food and Drug Administration Commissioner Dr. Stephen Hahn told Tucker Carlson on Monday night the preliminary data shows that the antimalarial drugs touted by President Trump can help in treating coronavirus patients, but stop short of a formal recommendation. We do have data from other countries we're looking at, and specifically the one trial from France, which suggests we might have some benefit against the COVID-19 disease. Now, they didn't mention the research that's been done by the University of Kansas, and we had that for you in the op-ed piece yesterday, but I'm sure they know about it.
Yeah.
I'm positive they know about it. It was in the Wall Street Journal.
Yes. If they don't know about it, they're really horrible at their job.
Right.
No, but this is, again, the promise, and it would be just great to see a great level of success of what they have seen before. If that plays out in New York, we can all hope and pray that it does, then you ramp up production and a massive, massive effort to get this on the market, available to anybody and everybody who is symptomatic or test positive. I mean, you don't even have to be symptomatic.
We also have data from test tube experiments that it does have activity against the virus, Hahn continued.
Hmm.
That being said, we need more safety and efficacy data, particularly the effective side of this drug, to make the final determination about the effectiveness. Of course, you're going to have to come to a final decision on it, but if it works, they're going to know it works.
Right.
They're going to know it works.
Yes, exactly.
They're going to know that there will be a conclusion a week from now.
Yep.
They will come and say, okay, we need to get this out. And if it does have that effect, it changes the whole ballgame, changes everything. And it could be as I don't want to give any false hope. The one thing that I've noticed here, I've seen nobody in the medical community come out against it.
Mm.
You've said, of course, you've had doctors come out and say, well,
we don't know. Yeah, we have to do the testing. Right. We have to do the research, right. And for these conditions.
But I've not heard anybody from the medical community come out and say, no, this is dangerous to do this.
No.
No one.
Because, I mean.
Well, except the whatever it was, a Nigerian experiment where they gave him 2 grams or something. I don't even remember what the story was. And it killed somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you don't give them a dose that's lethal.
Right. Exactly.
And they can figure that out.
Yes. Yeah.
They've already figured it out.
Exactly. Well, I mean, again, we're looking at the formula. We see the road. We see the light at the end of the tunnel. We see something that is very real, not just theory. And I know that we'll get beyond this, and I'm hoping, and this, by the way, gives a lot of people a great deal of hope that we get back to where we were very quickly, because the shorter the span on this whole shutdown thing, the worse it gets for everybody, even if they never get the virus.
The other bit of data I think we should put out again is, and I did the math just a little while ago, we're now down to a 1.26% fatality rate, and that's important because that's in the United States.
Right, right.
Okay, and it can again, we don't know the testing elsewhere and how it has been done.
And the cultural differences and the availability of treatment and beds and everything else.
Well, and if, for example, if you only hit the hot spots, when it comes to be a statistician of pandemics, believe me, I'm not an expert. I don't know who is an expert on that.
Right,
I'm sure somebody probably has put together the statistical things on it in the medical community.
Sure.
But that was one thing where we were told that it was 3%, 3.4%. And they said, the doctor said, well, no, it's going to be coming down as we test a lot more people. It's going to be coming down. And so we see now that it's down to, in the United States, to roughly 1.26% as of yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And as we test more people, we'll see. But you're not going to know that probably for a couple of years until they do massive testing. And if it comes back up again, who knows? And we don't know what happens to this virus. But there'll be years of analysis on everything worldwide on this. And we'll know more in a couple of years probably after research is done.
Yep, definitely.
But I hope, and I'm sure everybody hopes, because this... If this does work, it changes the ball game completely.
Yeah,
we can. If this works, we can have society in a month from now as close to normal as we possibly can.
Right.
And at that point, if it does work a week from now, then you can start producing mass doses of this to anybody who has it. And then at that particular point, you can start getting back to normal.
Right. Yep. Because you treat the worst case scenarios. While monitoring the other more milder conditions. One article I saw yesterday that said, that one patient was saying that, or one doctor was saying that some patients experience kind of a almost like a relapse kind of curve where they, for a day or two, they feel like they're getting better and then it gets much worse. I don't know. Again, that wasn't based on a study. That was anecdotal evidence by a doctor. Doing some observations based on there. Not that it's not important, but it doesn't give us a wider scale scientific approach in terms of a study. But nonetheless, we do know who the high-risk groups are. We do know, again, we can monitor the most severe cases. When you get testing on the market, and it's widely available, and we start testing at a much greater rate, the death rate, probably the ratio, definitely will change, and we're hopeful it will change to the downside of the total fatality rate on that. But then you, you know, look at having this, you know, this hydroxychloroquine and Z-Pak combo on the market readily available to doctors and pharmacies everywhere, and it changes everything immediately.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour for Freightliner, run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
If you want to get in, 866-90-RED-EYE, we'll get to more of your calls and comments coming up following the top of the hour. It's interesting because RealClearPolitics.com has their coronavirus global deaths.
Yeah, wow.
And they actually break it down. And it's funny because I did my own math, and I just happened to go to their site. I went, oh, okay, they're doing more math for us. They're looking at deaths per million population, and they have the confirmed case fatality rate across all countries. And we'll hit that coming up following the top of the hour. For example, the United States, our death rate is of those that have it, that we know of so far, is 1.26%.
Right.
In Italy, 9.5%.
Wow.
China, 4%. Spain, 6%. Iran, 7%. You go to Germany, 0.42%. Mm-hmm. So you look at this and say, is it that different across the board, or is the sample of the number of people who have it, is that what is completely and totally flawed?
Right, exactly.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. RedEyeRadioShow.com. We stream live, or get our app, put it on your phone, and listen at your convenience. Ah, yes. How's everybody doing, huh? You hanging in there?
Hope everybody's okay. Apparently Madonna's not. Maybe she is. Maybe
Grandma Gaga.
Maybe that's her way of coping. I mean, I hope she's okay. I hope everyone's okay. But look, you can be weird, right? I guess it's okay. It's not against the law.
No.
Okay, fine. Yeah. I don't need to see an 80-year-old woman in the bathtub, you know? Is she 80? Has she made 80 yet?
Wow. That is why we call her Grandma Gaga, though, right? I guess that is the...
You know, I looked it up one time. Did you know Tanya Tucker is actually younger than Madonna? I looked that up one time.
Well, this is going back. I'm going to say the statement. Everyone would say, okay, right. Boomer.
So
she must have been 8 when she was dating Glenn Campbell?
Yeah, something like that. I got to double check that. I'm pretty sure I'm right on that.
Okay, Boomer.
Tanya's a friend of the show. Be careful. She loves us.
Oh. Well, come on. It's I was talking age.
Oh.
Well, in other news, look, we've got to bring this up because it makes the point that we've always made.
Right. All right.
Christine Pelosi, daughter of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, tweeted Sunday that Kentucky Senator Rand Paul's neighbor, who once violently assaulted him, was right. Rand Paul's neighbor was right, Pelosi said in response to a tweet about Paul having the COVID-19 from Washington Post reporter Paul Kane. Now, you know, she's always on. I see her on CNN and MSNBC all the time.
Right.
They use her all the time to promote liberal principles. So there you go.
Yeah.
Rand Paul comes up with COVID-19, and she says the neighbor was right.
Yeah.
Which means he was right to attack
him. To attack him.
To attack him.
Yeah.
So there you go.
There's our civil society, right?
There's a civil society that they demand from Trump.
By the way, I was right.
Hey, you were?
Yeah.
Well, that's shocking to begin
Tanya
with.
Tanya Tucker is actually younger than Madonna.
Oh, okay.
By 3 months.
Well, I'm so glad
I won the bar bet.
I'm so glad we did.
Here's the thing. I finally win a bar bet and no bars are open.
Just thank goodness we did an update on that story.
Hmm. I'm not sure where I'm going to spend Easter Sunday, whether it's going to be in my living room, my den, or my kitchen. You see those memes going around. Not sure where I'll spend this Saturday night because nobody's going out.
I like the one. Do you see the wine tour?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's glasses of wine. Yeah, glasses of wine in every room. Yeah.
Bar hopping.
Bar hopping. Exactly.
Yeah. All that, yeah. I'm glad people are able to, or at least some people are able to keep a sense of humor. The whole thing with Neil Diamond, I thought was great. I thought it was funny.
I actually went out and went to get the mail, talked to a neighbor yesterday and who said he's probably getting laid off. But it's like everybody knows you stay 6 feet away, even out in the open. It's like nobody shook hands. It was, and then down the street, I couldn't believe it. Somebody was getting a roof put on.
Wow.
I'm like, okay. I don't know if that will continue in Dallas County today. I don't know if that is considered necessary work.
Or
essential work.
Yeah, I think to shore up a dwelling, I would think so.
Shore up a dwelling would be? Okay.
Right. Yeah. Because if it needs a new roof, you know, the dwelling is compromised.
Okay.
Yeah, I would think so. I'm trying to use logic. I'm not sure that Judge Jenkins in Dallas County is using logic, but that's the logic I would use.
And that's because where we broadcast from is in Dallas County.
Right.
And there's, we have the shelter in place, which went into effect at 11:59 p.m. Yeah. last night.
They always do things right before our show starts.
Just before our show starts.
You know, it's like just in time to just, you know, annoy the guys at Red Eye. I think that's what he was thinking.
Well, it'd be interesting to see what traffic is like when I head home.
Yeah,
I'll make sure I will not go the tollway. I'll go the other way that goes the majority through.
Right, that has the real traffic on it. Yeah,
that has the real traffic.
The greater traffic.
The greater traffic, and that goes more through Dallas County.
Right, yeah. Past the strip clubs. That are all shut down, I guess, right?
Hey, 2 nights ago I went by and I didn't see anybody there.
Wow.
But then you sit there and you think, if you talk about a business where you might be afraid to spread a virus, a communicable virus.
Why weren't they the first?
Are they an essential business?
Well, if you've got liquor stores open and pot stores open.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, right. my old producer, Leafy.
No relation to topic.
No relation to the topic at all. Leafy.
Yeah.
Because I asked him, I said, is it in Oregon, if they shut down, will pot be viewed as essential? And he goes, yeah, it has to be. And he just sent me something. He just sent me a screenshot where it was an anchor talking about pot. And he goes, yeah, see, it is. And so I think he meant it's considered because I don't know if they decided to shut down look, things changed so much. This was yesterday afternoon.
Right.
And I think that they were considering it. I don't know if they did the shelter in place, but I think pot delivery was considered. Think about this.
Well, I saw some restaurants and bars saying that, you know, because I got an email saying, hey, we're still open. And keep in mind, we can deliver beer and wine in your area.
Yeah.
And if you can buy legally, if you can buy spirits, then they can, you know, in the neighborhood where I'm at right now, they don't sell spirits. It's just beer and wine. Mm-hmm. So they can only deliver beer and wine. But it was one of the food delivery companies. I don't know if it's Grubhub or Uber Eats or where the email come from, but it was one of those companies. And they said, keep in mind that in some cases we can deliver beer and wine. And so you know, I guess I can understand the whole medicinal marijuana thing, and that's why you keep the dispensaries open in the states where it's legal. Medicinal rum? Not so
yeah,
much.
Yeah, but this is recreational pot, I believe. Exactly.
Yeah, no, I'm sure, yeah. Right, no, yeah. I think it applies to all.
Right.
The argument would be, well, it needs to stay open for people who use it medicinally.
Yeah. And yeah. You can't make that case for you?
Well, I was going to say medicinal rum.
Well, remember, hold it, remember when we used to get the cold and dad, what was it? Was it whiskey, hot water, and sugar?
I didn't ever get any of that when I was a kid. Robitussin and cough drops.
Yes.
that's what we got.
Okay, boomer. That's directed towards me.
Yeah, yeah.
the old...
No, I think it was something, I mean, I've seen it. Brandy, lemon and honey and whiskey. I think it's like 4 gallons of whiskey. And
you won't feel anything.
And a bottle of honey and 14 lemons.
Well, here's what I discovered yesterday.
Uh-huh.
I discovered yesterday that pool stores,
right?
Because I stocked up on everything I might possibly need, so I don't have to really go out for the next month,
right? Yeah.
And I actually stopped by Home Depot, but the line was too long because they're at the 125 limit going into the store,
right?
So the line must have been 125 people outside. I don't remember going into Home Depot on a weekday where there were 125 people in the store.
Yeah. Right.
And all of a sudden, there's a line out there. So I went to heck with that, because if you got the line, everybody's standing next to each other talking. I'm like, nobody's at 6 feet.
Well,
I'm like, the line is worse than going if you let everybody in the store.
Well, and it's an odd scenario, because I saw it on social media a little bit yesterday morning. And it was, and they were talking about it, because at 6 a.m., at least the couple of the different Home Depots that I've frequented in the past, they're open at 6 a.m., right? Mm-hmm. So if they open at 6 a.m., those construction guys are almost always there, not far from 6 a.m., because they got to get their supplies. They got to go over to the pro desk. And then I thought, well, you know, is there a priority? Because those guys are trying to make a living. You know, those guys don't work. They don't get paid. And not that if your individual plumbing breaks in, you know, in your home, that's not important, but you think of the priority of, okay, those guys, I can fix my whatever drywall tomorrow. Those guys got to go to work today. I was at a convenience store about a week ago, and I had to get gas because I was out of gas. I wasn't trying to top off or anything. I was actually out of gas. And it was at a huge convenience store, but right about that 5:30 local time mark, I mean, these crews come in, these construction crews, they come in and they get all their drinks and food for the morning. And they come back at noon, by the way, and do the same thing. And you see all of the, you know, what it takes to keep an infrastructure going.
Well, at Home Depot, 10 a.m.
Yeah. Is it 10 a.m. now?
Is now when they're opening up. Wow. They revised the time there. But yeah. I said to myself, because I asked this question, I don't know if it was on the air or off the air. I said, I wonder if pool stores are open, because I would want to make sure I stock up just in case.
Right.
Because we get, I don't know, two or three times a year, if you got a pool, that you must maintain your pool, because they don't want a lot of algae, still water, because of mosquitoes.
Right.
And therefore, West Nile virus.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I'm a racist.
You can't
I
say
said
West Nile.
West Nile. Oh, please forgive me.
The virus doesn't speak West Nile. You bigot. Oh, I had a neighbor that got it. You know,
no, it's not a laughing matter when you get
our area. It was one of the hard hit areas back several years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran into this guy. I sold him my jet ski, and he bought it. The guy's got like 7 kids, I think, big family. But they always go do something on the weekend together, and that's why they were, you know, buying the jet ski. And he told me he had been out of commission for months with West Nile. I was like, really? He goes, yeah, because that area that we were in was. It was a hard hit, highly concentrated area. I guess had the most cases of any concentrated zip code or something like that. But anyway, I mean, he told me, he said, man, it's the worst. It was the worst thing he had been through. You know, Dr. Drew talked about going through H1N1 because he was commenting on the media and how they're playing this and everything else with the coronavirus. And he said, look, I know what it's like. You know, I had H1N1. You can imagine all the doctors and nurses that are exposed to these viruses over and over again. And I mean, you know, you go to your doctor's office, the pen, you get it out of the bucket and you put it back in the bucket. They don't take anything from you. They don't now at fast food, if you can go inside, you don't hand them the card. You know, they're going through that. But in the healthcare profession, I mean, it's just amazing that we don't have a ton more cases. And let's hope and pray we don't lose a lot of them because they're out sick.
Well, when I went into the pool store today, I said, you know, you're going to be open no matter what. They said, yep, we're viewed as necessary because people need to keep their pools clean.
You got to keep them maintained.
So mosquitoes don't, you know. and I don't know whether it's a problem, but I get probably two or three postcards a year from my city stating, you better be keeping your pool clean.
Yep.
And so I walked in just to make sure I had enough for like 2 months.
Right.
And it's funny because you walk out and I'm thinking to myself, I don't think I caught anything from this store because you smell your hands. All you smell is chlorine. I'm probably safe right here.
Might be one of the safer places to work, too, I guess.
Yeah. But pet stores are viewed as necessary.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you've got to take care of your pet because if there is some kind of, you know, keep in mind, this was started as an animal disease.
Yeah.
You know?
So, but my county that I actually live in, I'm 1,000 feet from Dallas County.
Right.
So I'm just, you know, it will be interesting. I probably won't be out for a couple of days. I don't have any reason really to go out now.
Right.
Because I've gotten everything that I wanted. I didn't get the stuff from Home Depot that I wanted because it's time. I'll be doing, we're going to be, what, by the end of the week, 88? Mm-hmm. We're going to be close to 90 degrees. Mm-hmm. It's going to be lawn work.
Yeah, right.
And you can do all the lawn work you want. And people, I can guarantee all my neighbors will be out doing lawn work because we got nothing else to do.
Right. Yep.
You know, thank you. Thanks to the Republicans, my taxes are a lot simpler now, so I still haven't done my taxes.
I did mine. It was very simple.
Yeah. Very,
I mean, very simple.
Yeah, very, very simple.
I looked at the number of pages that I, you know, if I would have printed it off, and it's much, much smaller.
Oh, than what it used to be? Oh, yeah. We thank the Republicans for simplifying our taxes but increasing them.
Yeah, thanks a lot, stupid Republicans. Stupid Ted Cruz.
That's why Eric and I are really afraid of this stimulus plan.
Exactly.
Well, everybody's getting money. Oh, no, they're going to increase mine
now. We need a check from Eric and Gary to help pay for this.
Yeah. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Let's go to Jason in Chattanooga about the stimulus bill. Jason, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Thank you, guys. Love what you guys do. Appreciate everything you do. My comment is I don't understand. They're doing all this fighting back and forth about, well, it's called a slush fund, blah, blah, blah. They're worried about the big corporations. If they really want to get the money in the American people's hands, I don't understand why they can't draft it shouldn't take more than 2 pages to say, okay, these people are getting this much money, these people are getting this much money, pass that, and then go back and do all this other fighting about the corporations and who else is getting what. But if they want to get us the money, the American people, why can't they just draft a quick little bill to say, let's give these people this money?
Because the Democrats don't care about you getting your money. They care about getting their agenda done more. They see this as an opportunity. They actually set it out right. And so they don't need to cooperate because they have the House. They have the majority in the House, and they're going to run the show. And this is what they're going to do. This is a perfect example of how they don't care about the American people. They only care about their agenda.
I know. And to me, they can go back and fight about their agenda all they want to. But if they want to stand up there on their soapboxes and say that, oh, we love the people and we want to get them this and blah, 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 okay, then just write a little bill that takes 2 pages to say, here's this money for y'all, and then go back and fight over all this other crap that you want to fight about.
Well, that's great, but they don't see the opportunity later to do that, because once they get the American people their money, then where's the leverage that they have to get their agenda done? This is the, this is how they look at it. I mean, it's pathetic. It is. It's pathetic. You're right. They should be able to. This should only pertain to the current crisis at hand. End of story, full stop. And thank you, Jason, for the call. But, you know, you're using logic, and the Democrats don't care to use logic, and they don't care about people getting their money. They don't care about getting things done quickly.
And Clyburn was absolutely blunt and crystal clear to the Democrats on it.
Yep. Here is your forecast.
A fairly potent weather system that was in the Mississippi Valley and Tennessee Valley yesterday continues to shift eastward this morning for the areas north of New York City into Boston, upstate New York, and into Maine. We'll see snowfall for the New England states. For the remainder of the south, though, still partly to mostly cloudy, we'll continue to see rain showers there. But the bulk of the showers will now shift to portions of Kansas, Oklahoma, and Arkansas, where severe weather is potentially possible. For most of the Midwest and Mid-Atlantic, we'll be drying out today. Out to the Intermountain West, heavy snow for Idaho, Montana, and especially western Wyoming continues. For Salt Lake City, Utah, mainly rain. Now, by tomorrow night, we'll see that rain snow become a potential mix for Salt Lake City, with a low in the lower 30s. There's your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Your forecast is brought to you by the TruckSmart mobile app from Travel Centers of America. Download TruckSmart today to get what you need when you need it.
Here.
Don't miss a moment. The podcast is always online and on your phone. RedEyeRadioShow.com and the Red Eye Radio app.
And he's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 of Red Eye. Welcome and good morning, and thank you so much for being here this morning. Look, on the we've said this both, you know, a couple of times on, you know, what kind of package you would need. This affects both people and companies.
Right.
Yep. Companies are going to be harmed. Many companies will be harmed more than they were in 2008, 2009.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the coronavirus. It's right. Just the reality of it. We have looked at many different economists who say actually helping the companies is more important than throwing out cash to the people. Right. Because if you throw out cash to the people and the companies are all out of business, you haven't accomplished anything.
No.
And so when you have the Democrats coming out and stating, and by the way, you will have... We've already had, you know, comments of people saying, look, if it's small business loans, that's not really going to help small business. You may have a point depending on how much a small business and, you know, is leveraged.
And the terms of the loan, I guess.
And the terms of the loan. You may be right. If it's not direct cash payments,
right.
If it's all loans, but if you've seen the Democrats wanted to tie a lot of the loans to permanent regulations on those companies.
Yeah.
That if you take the loans, then even after you pay the loans off, you must agree to this. On your board of directors, you must have a union member.
Right.
You must, as a company, reduce for the airlines, reduce your global footprint by 50%.
Yeah. So give them some money for now and then punish them for the rest of their existence.
Yes. And we have said, well, okay, let's put restrictions on the people that get money, too.
Yeah, right.
Now, the thing I didn't like, it didn't matter. It's like if you make more than the $75,000, And even if, even or whatever, $75,000 or for a couple, $150,000 or whatever it ends up being. Whatever that, I think you get some if you, you get some if you're single and make up to $99,000. And if you, you get some if you make up to $200,000 as a couple. Was the last one. I don't know what this one's going to be. But the one that the Democrats came up with is that everybody got money. But the fact is, if you made more than that, you got to pay it all back.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, so you're making my life, you're making people's life a hassle. You're giving them money, and then you're saying, but you got to pay it back later on.
Right. Well,
why are you wasting your time doing that?
That's a government loan.
Because that's, in essence, what they're saying. We're giving you money now to help you now in case you need it, but you got to pay it back.
Right. It's a government
loan. I hope they don't put any regulations on the people that they're giving loans to,
well, because,
and not just money to.
Well, because here's the thing. Let's say you're making that money now, right? You're making it that you're above that threshold where you're making that the government is going to make a loan to you. And then all of a sudden, your industry goes bankrupt. And 3 years from now, you can't pay it back. You're making $25,000, not $200,000.
Right. You still got to pay it back.
You still got to pay it back.
Yep.
You've got a huge, huge, whatever it's going to be. But it's a bill that is due to the federal government, and you better believe they're going to get their money.
Well, the other thing was, and I don't know how they resolved this, but this was, I've forgotten how this would have been the Republican bill, the first bill that they passed, which said they would take it out of 2008. They would look at you, and you would get the money based on what you made in 2018, or if you didn't have that, 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And people are like, well, wait a minute. But what if I lost my job in February early on because of this?
Right.
If I lost my job and I was making over $75,000 and now I make nothing, I get nothing.
I mean, because if you're going to do that basically through, you know, the Treasury Department, then what if you were making, $200,000 in 2018 and then all of a sudden in 2019 you were making zero and you haven't, right. Or you were making very little and you're making very little now.
Well, you could use your 28, you're right. You wouldn't be able to collect.
You wouldn't collect.
You wouldn't collect, no.
And your state, right. Your state of, you know, of your financial state right now doesn't play into it. So what's the point? Because if you're talking about helping people in 2018, those people don't need help.
Right. Now, but that was the Republican. And then you got the Democrat bill, but now you have the new one, which is the Mnuchin-Schumer bill. And no, we don't have any idea whether Mnuchin paid attention to anything that the Republicans in the Senate were throwing out. So we don't know where this bill is going. I'm assuming he had to take part of the playbook from what the Republicans had.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I don't know. It's all new territory, but none of it is going to make sense. I mean, you decide to give people money, you just give but here's, it's exactly what we said. You know, you give people $1,200. If you're making $100,000 in the Bay Area, cost of living, are you factoring in cost of living? You're going to do
No, you're not. No.
No, you don't.
They won't be factoring cost of living.
No.
It'll have a different effect in California than it will in the middle of rural America in a town of 10,000.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know what's in the new bill yet. So
we
commented about some of the things in the old bill and what the Democrats, you know, what they said, to begin with. But we know what they were trying to put in.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about what Clyburn said. And this is why. You can't make the case, Democrat. If you support Democrats, you can't make the case it wasn't about politics, because Clyburn made it clear last Thursday when he told his colleagues this is a tremendous opportunity, quote, a tremendous opportunity to restructure things to fit our vision. It wasn't, we need to get aid to these people because this is disaster aid, and we need to give disaster aid to the people and the companies that need it because this is unprecedented in American history and in this modern American history in this time. No, what he said was, this is a tremendous opportunity to restructure things to fit our vision. He's blunt about it. I don't think he's apologized for it or something.
No.
I misspoke there. It's what he and the Democrats believe. And so what did they do? They went on to exactly do what he said.
Yep. 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 It's, but this is, you know, again, they're pushed, they're pressed right now. The pressure is on. It's all about time. It's all about, you know, getting people the money and time. And for the left, it's all about getting their agenda done.
Let's go to Jim in Arizona. Jim, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hi there. Hey, I was wondering, why don't they just think about letting people draw on their 401k penalty free?
That was in the Republican bill. I don't know if it's going to be in this new bill, but it was in the Republican bill, and I'm assuming it probably will be in this bill because I think the president also wanted that. But you probably aren't going to find the majority of people that wish to remove money from their 401ks right now.
Mm-hmm.
They're not really the incentive because if you sat there, for example, let's hypothetically say you had $300,000 in your 401k. Right now, you've got less than $200,000 in it because of the last 3 weeks. Odds are you're not going to want to take money out.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a huge incentivizer for people. It still could end up in the bill. And I think the limit that I saw was $10,000.
Oh, I saw $100,000.
Did you see $100,000?
Yeah. $100,000. Yeah.
Okay, we're doomed.
Up to $100,000.
Wow.
Up to $100,000.
Well, because here's the thing.
I don't know if it's in this bill.
Right. But just the idea of it. I mean, as we just discussed, the idea of all these, you know, items. you take $100,000 out of a 401k, and then all of a sudden down the road you're more dependent on government. You know, you're more dependent.
Yeah, that's true.
On government. When we know that this is going to be relatively short-lived. There will be a cure or a vaccine for the coronavirus. I'm not saying it's not going to get worse, but there will be a cure. We will get beyond this. And so years down the road, you're going to have people, if you put it at 100,000, penalty-free. Now, penalty-free, by the way, is different than tax-free.
Right,
you still have to pay the tax.
You still have to pay the tax.
And that would, if you would have to, that 100,000, let's say the number still was 100,000. You have to add that to your revenue, your income rather, for the entire year. And that puts you in a much higher tax bracket.
And my good friend Richard, a financial advisor, is screaming to make it tax free. That's not going to happen.
No.
There's no way government would set the precedent for letting you get.
They might be able to do like a $5,000 tax-free penalty, free kind of thing, but they wouldn't do $100,000.
But once you set that precedent, I don't think government ever wants to set a precedent of giving it back.
Right.
Just like they're always trying to find a new road to take it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he would be his point. My friend Richard's point, which would be better that you take your own money and don't pay the taxes on it than have to give you a huge bailout later on down the road and borrow the money.
Right.
That future generations have to pay.
Mm-hmm.
If you can use your own money in a disaster situation, isn't that a better situation than government taking care of you and putting the burden on future generations? Because, look, all this money's being borrowed.
Yeah.
This whole everything, everybody, when you get your check a couple of weeks from now, your grandchildren and great-grandchildren are paying for it.
Yes. Yes, they are. And
the billionaires of today are
right.
If you're on the left going, well, the billionaires, no, they're not.
Well, who cares who cares? And that's at least an arguable point. Who cares if I'm a burden? Do I care if I'm a burden years down the road when I hit retirement age and I would access that money of mine versus the massive, massive debt of the federal government, which would also put, you know, my situation in peril based on my consumption, based on anything that I might be earning or anything else at that point? I still think it's dangerous. But here's the question. The libertarian in me says, all right, it's my money. You're not going to get $100,000 tax free, but it's my money. Let me use my money and keep the government out of it.
Now, I
don't know.
We don't know what's in the new bill, though.
Right, right.
I mean, this is the best thing. Nobody has any idea right now
right. What's
in the new bill. They expect it to pass today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. It's always we expect it to be done today.
Right. So we have a feeling that we're going to have to pass the bill
before we
can see what's in it.
Of course. Of course.
If you want to get in, we do have a line open, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90. Red Eye, with some audio coming up, your calls and comments following the top of the hour. Schumer told reporters early this morning that he expects Republicans and Democrats in the Senate to come together and reach an agreement on a $2 trillion coronavirus stimulus package. Remember just last week it was $850 billion to $1
trillion? Right.
And that set off a fierce debate on the Senate floor and allegations from both sides that the other one was politicizing the emergency. Despite the logjam, Schumer and Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin told reporters that progress was made in late night negotiations. Schumer says he expects a vote sometime on Tuesday. We don't know what influence the Republicans had on Mnuchin, but to craft the entire bill.
Yeah,
I'm assuming that the input from the Republicans was there with Mnuchin. I would hope so.
I would hope that at least the input from the president was there.
Yes.
I don't know about McConnell. Certainly there had to be some consideration for that. You know, not just having Schumer. Is it possible that McConnell and the White House said, okay, let's let Mnuchin handle this with Schumer, not McConnell, not the White House.
One of the key issues of the package is the $500 billion exchange stabilization fund. Democrats called it a slush fund, claimed Mnuchin would have far too much influence over which industries would have access to the fund. Mnuchin denied the claim, saying it's not a slush fund. It's a mechanism that we can use, working with the Federal Reserve, that will provide another $4 trillion of potential liquidity to the market. That's on top of the Fed's balance sheet. A political reporter citing three sources tweeted that Mnuchin agreed to significant oversight for the fund in part of the negotiations.
Mm. All right. Well, I guess we'll see if the Republicans cave. We have to see what's in it. But then, you know, if you've got a bunch of pork passed on to that or backed onto that bill, do the Republicans cave just to get the money in the hands of people that need it?
Yep.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.